You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hello, hello, Launch Street. You know I started this day super hungry. So I guess it's a good thing I'm going to be interviewing the founder of a very successful food brand. Or I don't know, maybe that will make my hunger worse. Who knows? All right. And have I told you how excited I am that we have our new sponsor, Brility Digital? I've actually worked closely with them and they have helped me gain exponential growth in my business. So I'm super excited to share them with you. So this episode is brought to you by Brility Digital, who applies strategic thinking to your company's growth objectives and then uses what they find to identify opportunities others miss in order to help drive your company's growth. But I didn't want to bring you just a sponsor. I wanted to bring you insights. So I do a short interview partway with their founder, Derek Kuhn. He's mad genius. And check out our show notes because we have a link to their digital presence assessment for your business or brand. It usually costs thousands, but they've made it free to launch treaters that qualify. All right, back to my empty stomach. I'm always so impressed with innovators that don't necessarily create a totally new product, but more find an unmet need in the marketplace and a way to improve a product that actually changes the game. And that's exactly what Matt Cohen, founder of KidFresh, did. Matt Cohen graduated from the European Business School of EdHEC, going on to hold diverse senior positions within management consulting firms. Now, Matt left the corporate world looking to develop a meaningful brand that would resonate with people. Upset, like a lot of us parents, by the limited healthy food options available to children when he became a parent, Matt envisioned a line of better-for-you and tasty kid meals made with high-quality ingredients enjoyed by adults. Thus, KidFresh was born. It's a lifestyle brand offering a range of nutritious food products that children love and parents feel good about. Which, by the way, I'm sure if you shopped Target or Walmart or Safeway or whatever grocery you have, that you've seen KidFresh. I've actually been testing them, the products, with my family, and chicken nuggets are our favorite. Okay, let's do this. Matt, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm looking forward to this.
Hi, Tamara. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. So tell us, what is your first memory of being innovative?
Well, I was 9 years old and my dad didn't want to let me watch TV on Saturday afternoon. He wanted me to go out and play in the backyard and be outdoors. So what I did is I tricked him. I moved the TV against the window so that I could watch it from outdoors. And he couldn't say anything. He had to like concede. And that was my first victory in that respect. But more importantly, it was also interesting because later I found out about the drive-in theaters in the U.S. I didn't know. I grew up in France. And so, you know, at nine, I didn't know that there were theaters out there in the world where you could be in your car or even outdoors.
I mean, does it get any better?
It doesn't get any better. So I realized later on that I already had sort of a special calling for the United States.
That's really funny. I have to tell you, it reminds me, your dad conceding kind of reminds me of, I've got two boys and they're 10 and 14 now. And sometimes they come up with something so clever that's a workaround to my rule or what I did that I have to give it to them because I'm so impressed with, you know, they're kind of like what you did with putting the TV by the window. I mean, you kind of want to reward someone when they're being a kid, in particular, when they're being innovative.
Absolutely. The same applies to me. I have two kids, one 17, one 14. And I can tell you I give in a lot.
Yeah.
I concede a lot.
Yeah. I love it. It just makes me happy to know that I'm not the only one who goes, well, God, that was really clever. Okay. I'm done here.
Welcome to the club.
That's right. Well, let's fast forward just so that kind of we can get all on the same page. Tell us the story behind KidFresh and, you know, what it is and also the inspiration behind it.
So KidFresh is a brand that is centered on better food for kids, but also offering a solution for parents. It really started you know, for me as a parent. You know, one morning I was taking care of the kids and we were rushing to school. They were little at the time. And, you know, sometimes you don't know why there are mornings like that where the kids just want to drive you nuts.
Yes, that is the truth.
You know those?
And yeah. I think that I'm convinced that they actually get together and make a plan before the day even starts. Like, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make mom mad.
it's a conspiracy.
Yes.
Absolutely. It's a conspiracy. And so that day they had conspired against me. And, you know, long story short, I tried to get them ready out the door on time. And then we get in the elevator and then my son looks at me and say, "Hey, Dad, what about the lunchbox?" And I'm like,
oops.
Shit. Excuse my
there,
French.
No, been there, done that.
I had completely forgotten about this lunchbox thing. And I was like, okay, well, we'll figure something out. And, you know, along the way, as we walked through school, I, you know, got them a sandwich in the store or something like that. But more importantly, that was a trigger in my mind to say, why do we still have to make lunchboxes? I mean, we're in the 21st century. I live in New York City. I can get anything I want ready for me, delivered, cooked, prepared. Yet lunchboxes is still something that I need to do.
Yeah.
And it seemed to me so inadequate, if you will, so sort of out of this time. And that's really what triggered the idea of Kid Fresh, which was, hey, let's find, you know, healthy solutions that address the parents' problem, which is to offer, you know, better food for their kids, right? To feed the kids.
Yeah.
The kids don't have a problem. The kids are fed. They will eat. They'll be fine.
Right.
The problem is the parents, right?
Right.
And so that's how it started.
You know, it's interesting. And I think looking kind of back, and I make my kids lunches, so I totally know where you're coming from. And I remember being stuck one day and my only option being Lunchables. No offense, Lunchables, but that was really it. I ran into the grocery store and was like, oh my God, I got to get something. I don't have anything. And it was either that or buy a bunch of deli meat and make it in the car.
You know, just, you know, talking about Lunchables for a minute. I lived in California for a couple of years and my son was about 2 years old at the time. And we would take him to a daycare. I'm talking about Northern California, Marin County.
Yeah.
The first time we got to the daycare, they gave us a list of forbidden items, food items. Some were relative to allergies, which is okay. But then you had also listed in there Lunchables. And I was like, why? What's wrong with this thing? I didn't know about it.
I mean, what other options do I have?
Exactly. And then I looked at the ingredient deck and I understood why. Yeah.
So, you know, if I hear your story right, Matt, what really happened is you had a frustration and realized that you weren't the only one with that frustration. And then developed a solution for it, basically. When you launch this, you know, you're going up against really two competitors, I think, from kind of in my mind. One is the Lunchables, the other options out there, right? Frozen meals, Lunchables, whatever you can grab at the grocery store, the school option. But the other, I think, more invisible competitor is more inertia, meaning, oh, it means I have to change what I'm doing. So how did you think about your competitive world as you were launching Kid Fresh?
Well, the competitive world for Kid Fresh is, you know, the frozen food category.
Yeah,
right?
Which
today,
is big.
Kid Fresh is, yeah. And, you know, for many years, that category has been stagnating or declining because of the fact that consumers didn't want to buy the junk food that was sold in the frozen food aisle. And so, you know, for us, the idea was to disrupt this category by offering better for you food products for kids, not in a sort of a premium offering, but in an everyday quality offering. So our consumer is the everyday mom and dad. You know, we're sold at Walmart, at Target, at, you know, Kroger and, you know, conventional retailers. And the idea was to say, hey, it's not because it's frozen that it has to be junk As a matter of fact, frozen is the best way to preserve foods without any artificial preservatives or additives. Let's disrupt that category.
So I'm curious about, you know, you just said something I think really important about you wanted this to be an everyday product, an everyday brand, not, you know, only for the people living in Marin or in Boulder, Colorado, right? I mean, that's a certain group of people. I mean, I grew up in the Northern California, so I get it. Like, there's a certain group of people. They have a certain wealth to them, which is fine. Great. You know, it's the American dream. But, you know, for the rest of us who are also shopping at Walmart and Target on a regular basis for our everyday needs, how did you think about what the brand and the business that you needed to build to match that? Because that is very different than a premium brand or luxury brand, for lack of a better way of saying it. It's not to say that your ingredients aren't premium, but just the overall business and brand is different.
Yeah. I mean, the one important thing is the fact that quality, up to, you know, fairly recently, quality was associated with organic.
Yes.
It had to be organic to be quality. And if it was organic, it was quality. It's actually not true.
Oh.
Organic is the quality of the ingredient, right?
Yes.
And it's true that, you know, an organic tomato or, you know, an organic ingredient is the best that you can get. But it doesn't mean that the meal will be of the best quality, right?
Right.
It doesn't mean that the meal will taste good. It doesn't mean that the meal will not be will be nutritionally balanced. And so we went against that belief and say, well, let's pick the best possible ingredients that we can, not always organic when we can, but certainly 100% natural, right? And let's make the products that have the greatest possible taste and the greatest possible nutritional profile. And that allowed us to offer a product that did not price ourselves out of the everyday consumer, but to the contrary, that brought, you know, almost organic level quality to everyday consumers.
You know, one of the things I've come to realize over my years in innovation is that, you know, when you want to go up against a prevailing notion, like, you know, organic is the only way to be high quality, or just you're changing people's maybe perceptions or mindsets and even behaviors, that there's typically a learning curve of getting, you know, educating your marketplace on why, kind of to your point, quality can mean these things instead. What lessons did you have kind of coming out of that experience of trying to shift the marketplace? And did they immediately respond to you? Was it a learning curve of education? There's a lot of questions in there, but you know where I'm headed.
Well, I'm learning every day, first and foremost. So I am in the learning curve, nonstop. But I would say that, it's very much a matter of being authentic, being real, and believing in your product. If you don't lie on the product claims, if you don't try to trick your consumers by telling them, you know, it's not artificial, but hey, you know, there are things in there that could be, type of thing. If you're just straightforward, real, authentic, your consumers will reward you for that. And that's been our, you know, approach.
Okay, I am here at Launch Street with Derek Kuhn, who is the president of Brility. Derek, you are the perfect person to have this conversation with. I want to talk to you about business growth because I suspect most of us are doing it wrong. I know I was. So how do you think about growth?
Hi. Hi, Tamara. So you're right. We have definitely seen some challenges how people think about growth. I think it boils down to this. They have these lofty aspirational goals, and then they have a bunch of disconnected plans and to-dos. The biggest thing I see, the biggest mistake they make is once they set these objectives and these aspirational goals, they need to spend some time thinking through and defining their strategy. And as we talk about strategy, it's an interlocking concepts that have compounding effect that are based on detailed research about your market opportunity, your company, your competitions, and then we form that, which allows us to be adaptive. So growth is mostly limited by the lack of a strategy, not for lack of goals and certainly not for lack of to-dos, but a thoughtful approach to the method behind the growth.
So Derek, let me ask you this. When you say compounding effect, I mean, I know what that means, but how do you know if you have the right pieces that allow that to happen?
Well, that's a great question. And this is where our focus on digital platforms really delivers. In order to judge the effectiveness of your efforts, digital, unlike anything in the history of man, finally allows us to see in real time interactions, how things are being affected, the ripple effect, as well as the direct effect. And then we can adapt continually based on the feedback loop that we get.
All right, I'm going to go a little bit personal on Launch Street and on you, but I have to ask because I think I'm not the only one facing this. You know, one of the things I really over here at Launch Street struggle with growth is we've done all these elements to grow. The phone is ringing or, you know, the product is selling, whatever it is. The clients are coming. And then I realized, OMG, I have a delivery problem now. So I hit my growth. You'd probably call them goals. But I don't know. I don't have a strategy or I haven't figured out how to follow up. So how do you think about those two elements of kind of where you're trying to go and then delivering on that?
Yeah, well, let me tell you, first of all, that is a common challenge we see amongst our clients and is certainly that is what we call a good problem to have most of the time, right?
Yeah.
So and it does come back to when we sit down and develop a strategy for our clients, scaling is included in growth. For example, if there are certain aspects of what you offer that have capacity, part of a good strategy is going to orient around those first. We prioritize those and then we sequence later growth over the long term. So it is definitely something to consider. And if you can build a strategy from the beginning, accounting for both growth and scaling, then that is the best way to handle that.
That's so fascinating. So what are the initial steps that you have clients take just kind of right out of the gate to better understand where they are versus where they're trying to go and what it's going to take to scale, to bridge that gap?
That's a great question. So I've been doing this for 15 years and developed a process specifically for what you just asked. We call it the Digital Presence Assessment, the DPA. And what that is, we will sit down with a client for about 15 minutes, 30 minutes tops, and get a sense of their objectives and their business goals. We then dig into all of the research and we go explore every possible opportunity, the current challenges in the digital space. And we assemble an assessment as to how to proceed, illustrating in understandable terms the different options that you have to help achieve your goal. And from that space, that assessment, the clients and us form a strategy together.
Now, if I'm out there in Launch Street listening and I want a part of this DPA, how do I do that?
Well, we would be happy to do that. We actually offer it for qualified clients only. We do this for free. This thing, we used to charge thousands of dollars for it. And in some cases, we still do a more elaborate one. But this really is self-serving to us because it helps us match up are the aspirations of the client possible to achieve through a thorough assessment. And that's where, so for qualified clients, we do it absolutely free.
That's awesome. So I will, for Launch Street, I will put a link in the show notes to where you can learn more about that. Derek, always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Well, I think there's a huge lesson for us Launch Streeters about not over-promising too, you know, kind of to your point, not lying, kind of, we try to, I think, make claims that take it way too far. And I think consumers of all kinds, whether that's B2C or B2B, are very onto us. And one of the things I noticed with your packaging is, to your point, it's very lively and the color, the green color, it's very lively and very friendly, which I have to imagine makes a difference because especially in the frozen aisle and when you're getting to the quality, organic and other stuff, I find that most of their packaging is really stuffy and and it's like very serious, you know? And this to me really stands out. And I don't know if that was intentional or not, but I think it's well done.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Very much appreciate your feedback. I would say everything that we do is intentional, including our mistakes. I would say that the packaging in our design was very much talking to moms and not to kids. That was a very strategic decision that we made early on to say the moms, the parents, but most importantly, the moms have the problem. So let's talk to them.
Yeah.
The kids, they will be fed, they'll be fine. So for the kids, what matters is really the taste, right? So let's make sure the taste is kid friendly and that they like it. Otherwise, we don't even have a business.
Well, mom's not going to come back and buy it again, right? If kid doesn't get it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. For us, success is the empty plate, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a given. But then let's make sure the moms understand that this is a solution that is a better for you product that is as healthy as we can get, balanced. With the best possible ingredients, and we're very much talking to the mom more than to the child on our pack.
When you launched Kid Fresh into markets and into stores, what was the response? Did they get it the need immediately? I mean, nothing else like this had really existed yet. So how did they receive, you know, what you were selling?
It's been a fantastic journey for Kid Fresh, I have to say. You know, we started, we're based here in New York City in the Northeast, you know, so we started with local Northeast retailers, you know, smaller chains. And very quickly we saw that, you know, consumers were, hooked to the brand. What we found is that we had the highest loyalty and still have the highest loyalty rate in the category.
Oh, interesting.
Eight out of 10 parents or moms that try the product will buy it again. Oh. 80%.
Yeah, it's high.
So for us, it's very high. And so for us, the question was less about trying to keep people that were trying, but more to generate trial, right?
Because you know you're going to keep them.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So in frozen, obviously, it's challenging to generate trial, right? You're behind these glass doors. You know, the aisle itself is not conducive to any fun, you know, graphics or
not really. It's all just kind of shoved in there.
Exactly. Or merchandising, demoing is difficult and expensive. So it was a lot about social media and a lot about using some of the new technologies that allow you to send coupons or trial offers to consumers that you believe are relevant to the category.
You know, one of the things you said a moment ago was about even the mistakes are intentional. What are some of those mistakes that you made along the way that you think we can all learn from? And granted, when I ask that question, know that I love mistakes because I think that's where you learn the most. If it all goes right, you're probably staying a little too close to home anyway. But what are some of those?
Well, I would say as it relates to innovation, because we're a small team and we are, you know, running at 1,000 miles an hour every day, you know, in some cases we've launched products that we didn't have time to vet enough, to test enough, to really challenge enough. We've had a couple of items, not very, very few, but still, that didn't make the cut. And it's always hard because you put so much work and passion into your product, and obviously you always launch a product that you very much believe will work.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. I would hope so.
Of course.
Yeah.
But then, you know, at the end of the day, the market decides and moms decide. Or kids decide. So
I'm just going to interrupt you for a second because I love what you just said about at the end of the day, the market decides. And for launch readers listening, I would really take pause and pay attention to that. I think we often get trapped in it needs to be perfect on paper. But the truth is the marketplace will tell us what's working and what's not. But we can't know that on paper.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean,
you can
do
as many tests as you. Yeah, you do your best. At some point, you need to say, okay, am I going with this? Yes or no?
Yeah.
And then whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you, so keep going. That's so important.
No, so it's really about, we're a small company. I mean, we're 12 people, and we are, creating new products every year, year after year after year. So, you always have some that, won't cut it, and that's okay. But what's important is to learn from them and to say, hey, well, maybe we ventured into a category here or a segment that, you know, is not for us yet, or the product itself was not, you know, good enough.
Yeah.
You know?
How do you think about new products? How do you decide which ones to put some effort into and try out? What's that process like for you guys?
Well, first we start with the kids. They need to like it. So, you know, I come from France. I'm not going to launch a line of escargots or frog legs for kids.
It doesn't work here so much.
No, it's just not good. And even in France, in France, it would not work for kids either. But my point is, you know, we all have so many ideas, particularly as it relates to food.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, our consumer is the American kid of today. What do they like? What do they eat? And based on that, we then say, okay, how can we make these products better, right? You know, taking an example, you know, chicken nugget, right? There's nothing wrong with a chicken nugget per se if it's made with good
real chicken.
real chicken that is, you know, flash fried with good batter, with good breading, and so on and so forth. There's nothing wrong with it. Let's take that item that is very much associated to junk food in so many respects and make it good.
Yeah.
And the way we did that was, in this particular case, we blended cauliflower with a chicken so that there is some veggie in there. And we developed a breading that delivers a higher rate of whole grain per serving. And here you go. You have a very good chicken nugget that tastes great.
You know, it reminds me of, do you know Justin's, the nut butter, almond butter?
Yes, peanut
butter? Yeah,
of course.
So, yeah, they're great. They're actually out here in Colorado, and they launched a peanut butter cup. And they're kind of, I heard an interview with him, and I think he said something like, we find what people love, and then we try to make it better, which is, you know, in some ways what you're saying, you're not, I went into my question thinking, how do you find the new, you know, food ideas? But the reality is they're already there. They just need to be made better.
Absolutely. Oh. Absolutely.
It's interesting. You
know, yep. And that's our mission. It's really to take what kids love and make it better.
What do you think is your key to success? Because you've had, I think it's 50% growth year over year, if I got that number right, which is part of the reason why I want to talk to you, because I think, you know, it's very easy to launch and hit this like big inflection point. It's hard to sustain the growth.
Yes.
So what do you think your key is to that sustained growth?
Well, I think it's... you know, today's consumers mistrust big brands, and therefore there's a gap of trust that needs to be filled. This trust is the most important thing to gain, but once you gain it, you know you can lose it overnight.
Yeah.
So putting that trust that you have worked so hard to gain as something that you will not compromise under any circumstances is absolutely critical. And sometimes you have to make, you know, choices around, you know, products and ingredients and, you know, margin and profitability and say, well, okay, well, maybe this product that we're launching now is not at the level of margin or financial performance that we want, but that's the best we can do right now. We launch it as is, and then we continue to work and refine it, right? So gaining the trust, but then keeping it through everyday work, ethics, honesty, integrity is, in my mind, the most important thing, particularly in today's world where consumers talk to each other nonstop, and you're not the voice of your brand. They are.
Do you think that the... you know, transparency that's being forced now and the social media and our ability to connect and share our experiences, do you think that's an opportunity? Do you think that that's a roadblock you have to consider? How do you view that? Because to your point earlier about, you know, our distrust of big brands, I think part of that is because they used to be behind this big black curtain. We didn't know what happened. And as things seep out, those are typically not the good ones.
Right. And also what was happening is that they pushed the message, right?
Yes.
You know, advertising
was
on TV. Exactly. Advertising was on TV and you would watch it. And that was the message. And the message was, you know, try this product. It's good for you. It's going to make you feel better and you're going to look great and it's going to be happiness. and then you learn that it's crap and junk.
Right.
but today, quite frankly, a brand like ours does very little direct advertising. I mean, but there is a lot of talk and buzz around the brand that is coming through the consumers, through bloggers, through people that write their experience around the brand. And our job is to facilitate that, right? Is to make sure that, you know, we have the right platforms in place, that we have all the processes in place to allow this conversation to take place. I'll give you an example. You know, we're launching a new line, a new category of product. We were wondering about, you know, different types of flavors and things like that. And, you know, I say, well, you know, why don't we ask our consumers, right? We send an email out. In a matter of, I think, 24 hours, we got 750 responses.
Wow.
From moms that were saying, hey, I like this. No, that sucks. You know, this is not good. My kids will never eat that one, but this one is good. Wow. You know, that's the best. I mean, really being connected with your consumer, talking to them, hearing them, and working with them on an ongoing basis, I think is critical in general, but today in particular.
Yeah, you know, the lesson that I think is so important for us to remember out of your story, which is so fantastic, is that we shouldn't be afraid of the consumer. I think all too often we say, well, let's just get it perfect, and then we'll, you know, bring our product, our service to them. And I'll never forget when I started my, when I jumped off of the ledge of working for other people and went out on my own, the first thing I actually did was created a mock marketing one pager, went to all my past clients and said, hey, I just want your advice. These are kind of what I'm thinking of offering. And that helped me so much more than trying to, you know, do what I thought was right and then launch with this, you know, quote unquote done product out there. And there, it turns out there were things I got wrong that I hadn't even thought through until my customers told me. And I think we're often so afraid of our consumers. And what you're doing is putting them as part of the process the whole way. And I'd love to hear your perspective on this. I think our consumers, if we're good to them, love being along the journey with us. And they're okay if we make mistakes, if they're made with good intention. The lying is different, but I think they're willing to experiment with us.
Absolutely. Honesty and integrity are absolutely critical, absolutely critical. Consumers today will not forgive you, nor should they, if you lie or if you try to sneak in some stuff in your product.
Yeah.
So that to me is the most, one of the most important attributes and certainly one of our core values for sure. You know, to give you an example, I mean, I personally taste every batch of production.
Do you?
Like, yeah. Either myself or my co-founder and partner. But we are the two people that are authorized to clear a production lot, right? So I taste every single batch of mac and cheese or chicken nugget or meatball or fish sticks that is made.
Wow, I mean, that's not so bad.
No, it's not so bad, actually, I love it. But it's important. I mean, these are the type of things that I'm sure consumers, moms value, right?
I think so. And I think it's important that no matter what business we're in, we eat our own dog food, as they say. And all too often, we don't. We're actually 10 steps removed from our own products and our own services. And, you know, I oftentimes go into my business as a customer, you know, through the online portal and try it to see, well, what's working, what's not. Not as me on the back end, because I just don't see it as clearly that way. You know, you kind of have the curse of knowledge in a lot of ways. Now, I have to ask, have you ever, let me say it differently. You had said earlier something about, you know, you go down a path, you put all this effort into it, and it turns out not to be the right path, and you have to be willing to, you know, I don't think you said walk away from it, but shift gears at least. How is that process for you? Because I think those of us who are innovators, whether we're inside a company or an entrepreneur, calling our own baby ugly is really hard, even though it's the truth and the right thing to do.
Yeah, I would say it's not your baby.
Interesting.
It's the consumer's baby.
Yeah.
So you are just a facilitator here.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
You're not the owner, because if they don't own it, you don't have anything to own, right? So the reality is your consumer owns the product, and you're just facilitating that process to offer something, putting it out there, and they ultimately decide.
You just blew my mind with that. I just wrote that down because I think I struggle with that actually. I'm like, this is my offering to the world versus this is theirs to own, and I'm just here to get it right for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Launch readers, pay attention to that. That was great.
Okay.
On that note, I want to bring it back to you. How do you innovate?
So, you innovate either at a product level or at a category level, right? So, at the product level, we talked about it a little bit earlier in our conversation. It's really about what kids want, what moms say about what's a good idea and what's a bad idea. And then you go into a process of, concept development, then pilot, then sourcing, then manufacturing, packaging development, so on and so forth. But then when you look at categories, and what I mean by categories, for instance, is, in our world, should we go into, frozen breakfast? Should we go into frozen ice creams? Or should we go beyond frozen? Should we go into refrigerated lunchboxes, right? Or yogurts or dairy, this is much more about doing a lot of upfront market analysis, looking at trends, looking at competitive environments because it changes from one category to another. Also listening to our consumers to say, hey, you like it fresh today and frozen as an entree. If we had to create another line of product, which one would be your first priority? Which one would you feel comfortable sort of transitioning over, from frozen to another category? Is it beverage? Is it dairy? Is it snacks? So that takes much more time. And we have a process where we now have a 3-year innovation blueprint that shows sort of what are the next big things for KidFresh
coming
into the coming
ahead.
Years. Yeah, looking ahead, like very far ahead.
Yeah.
Right?
One of the things I'm obviously obsessed with is how people innovate, like the process and also like you particularly. And I get the sense from kind of you talking that one of the things that you're brilliant at is figuring out how to improve and constantly tweak and adjust. Some people are really good at, coming up with new and novel ideas as their way of innovation. Some people innovate by asking questions. I get the sense that you're really brilliant at taking kind of something that exists and going, I know how to make this better.
That's the idea. That's the idea. I mean, and that's very much relative to who is our consumer, right? The consumer is the child, right? And so they have their own world, right? We need to connect to that world, right? We need to start from there. When you innovate for adults, it's a little bit different because the adult will try, the adult will explore new things. But kids are very, into their own comfort zone, if you will. And it, as a mom, and we all know as parents, it's hard to push them beyond their comfort zone, particularly as it relates to food. So
yeah.
Our innovation process is very much relative to, at the end of the day, who will eat the product.
When you think about your team or other experiences that you've had, what do you think stops us from bringing innovation to the market? What roadblocks do we hit that if we could just, push aside, we'd probably bring better innovation to the world?
Well, I think the major roadblock to innovation is fear.
Mm.
It's fear of failure, fear of, not putting something out to the world that the world will like. And and I think, every entrepreneur goes through that. And I think to me, becoming an entrepreneur is very much being able to pass that and go beyond that feeling and say, okay, I will likely fail in some cases, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think to your point, I think fear is a big one. And I think it keeps us from innovating. And, you know, kind of to what you're saying, it's not that those of us who innovate often aren't afraid. It's just that we know that's part of the process of those mistakes, those failures. We kind of, I don't know, it seems to me that we kind of bake it into the process versus thinking of it as the outcome.
Exactly right. Exactly right. I think I would say that there's another, obstacle, I think is sometimes to be too focused on the short term versus long term, right? And to make choices that are very much driven by the short term that ultimately prevent you from achieving your longer term goals. And so it's always a struggle, right? Because obviously the short term is, you know, what we need to do now, you know, this product, we're launching it now, we need to launch it now, it has these attributes and so on and so forth. But is it really aligned with our longer term objectives? And it's that balancing act between short term and long term that is sometimes very hard to achieve.
You know, I agree 100% with you, actually. And I think in the business world right now, we have a real problem with this expectation for short term results. And we don't give things time to bake and really come to life. And, you know, there's kind of two analogies that I think of. And one is, you know, the show Seinfeld.
Yes,
that
course.
Didn't go well out of the gate. In fact, it bombed. So it took time for it to find its market, its groove, all that stuff. Had we had that same expectation in the 90s, you know, we wouldn't have Seinfeld, which I can watch over and over again. Frankly, in every good joke, you can like harken back to Seinfeld. And the same is true for those out there who watch football. I think with our coaches, it's the same thing. Or players, if they don't perform in one season, they tend to be out or on the way out or the talk is of the way out. And I find it – and in the business world, it's the same thing. And I find it really frustrating that we've gotten into such a short-term mindset. To your point, we're really missing out on what could be the long-term gain.
Absolutely. And the whole culture today is very much about instant gratification.
Yeah.
Our kids, yours and mine, you know, they are like teenagers now. You know, they click on a button and it needs to happen, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
And so they will have to learn that, you know, gratification doesn't come instantly and that you need to persevere and fight for what you believe is the right thing to do.
You know, I will own up to you, Matt, that I had a not so great parenting moment the other day. And it relates to this. My 14-year-old was in the car and I said, can you look up? I asked him to look up something. And so he said, hey, Siri, can you find out blah, blah, blah? And Siri didn't respond. Or something didn't happen. Siri wasn't working in the moment. And he was like, nope. I was like, well, hold on. Go find out some other way, just because Siri didn't answer. But really, what I've seen time and time again is if Siri doesn't answer, they just stop because of instant gratification. Well, it didn't happen. It's not possible.
Exactly.
I'm like, wait, hold. I got so mad. It was probably, like I said, not my finest parenting moment.
But I can relate. I can relate. But you know what? After a moment like this, you go home and you put together a nice meal with Kid Fresh chicken nuggets and Kid Fresh mac and cheese.
You're
back into their good graces.
That's right. That's right. So where can people go to learn more and connect with you before I ask the last question?
Sure. Well, the best is to go to our website, kidfresh.com. And they will learn about who we are, obviously, our brand, our team. You'll see that on our website, our team, including myself, we put pictures of ourselves when we were children. So on there, you'll see me when I think I was 3 or 4, just for the anecdote.
Oh, my gosh. There you are. I love it. I have it up. I have your website up as we're talking. So, oh, my gosh. These are the most adorable pictures ever, especially the one with the curlers. Angie, tell her thank you.
Yeah, Angie.
That picture just made my day. And, you know, I will tell you, I've tried several of your products. I've tried the egg bites, which I love, and I've tried the chicken nuggets. And yes. What I will just tell you, what I really appreciate about them is they're not just great for those moments that, you know, breakfast and main meal, but for my kids anyway, who are running in and out of sports, it's a way better snack than the stuff I have, other stuff I have in my freezer. So it's not only a, you know, small kid thing. It really, for my 14-year-old, he loves them because he can come in, pop some stuff in and like have it. And I feel good about it because I know that he's not eating the other junk that I don't tend to fill my house with, but he seems to find deep in the cupboard somehow.
Yes, I understand. I enjoy feeling, but thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
No, I love it. So the last question for you is, what's your one piece of advice you have for Launch Streeters looking to launch a new category almost the way you did?
Well, in front of my desk, I have this great saying from Franklin Roosevelt. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
So basically, get out of your head.
Yeah, just go, try, and adjust along the way.
Well, I think that is great advice for us to listen to end the podcast. So thank you so much for coming by. Just don't tell my kids that sometimes when they're not looking, I eat it for snacks. Don't tell them.
Okay. Okay, I won't.
So where are you going to follow that frustration to solve a problem? Matt started a company, but this applies just as much to you, entrepreneur. Where in your company can you find that frustration, that unmet need that, if solved, would change the game? It's out there waiting. That, I promise you. You just have to look at what's right in front of you in a slightly different way. Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.